Why do we produce the IMC Radio News?
Because the chasm isn't left to right. It's top to bottom.
To give voice to people who aren't heard.
To bust up the myth of objective journalism.
Bill O'Reilly does not have a monopoly on the truth.
To build our community and re-educate the public.
To revive the voice of organized labor.
To bring forth debate so as to animate democracy.
Because I want to agitate for revolution.
Listen to the voices of your community on IMC Radio News.
This week on IMC Radio News, the campaign against Kraft's use of genetically engineered foods, as well as coverage of this afternoon's Operation American Freedom rally. But first, here's Clint Popetz and Kevin Heinrich with headlines.
The UCIMC website reports that secret cameras spying on workers are a working condition that must be bargained, according to a U.S. appeals court. According to the Daily Labor Report, on April 7th, the Seventh Circuit Court of Appeals ruled that National Steel Corporation in Granite City violated the law by not bargaining with its 10 unions over the use of hidden surveillance cameras at the plant. Since 1987, the company has had over 100 video cameras mounted in plain view in the plant, but it also sometimes used hidden cameras. When an employee was fired on the basis of evidence from a hidden camera, the unions wrote the company requesting information on hidden cameras and saying their use was a mandatory subject of bargaining. In 2001, the National Labor Relations Board decided for the union and issued an order to bargain, and the company appealed.
The UCIMC website reports that in balloting counted on April 23rd, non-tenure-track faculty at Illinois State University in Normal voted 131-79 to be represented by the Illinois Education Association. During the year-long effort, the union charged ISU with two unfair labor practice charges, including making last-minute changes in employment conditions that interfered with the union vote and blacklisting a leading union activist. Non-tenure-track faculty comprise 40% of ISU's classroom instructors, and until now they have all been hired semester to semester as temporary employees, despite the fact that some have worked at ISU for more than 30 years. Pay equity and respect were also major issues during the campaign. A schedule for negotiations on a first contract has not yet been established.
The Village Voice reports that immigration officials are genuinely perplexed by Attorney General John Ashcroft's claim that terrorists are trying to enter the United States through Haiti. On Wednesday, the State Department ruled that all Haitian asylum seekers must be detained before entering the country. In response to Ashcroft's claim, a spokesman for the State Department's consular service had this to say, quote, "We are all scratching our heads. We are asking each other, where did they get that?" unquote. U.S. Representative Kendrick Meek from Miami was more than merely perplexed. This was her response, quote, "This is outright discrimination and racism by this Bush administration. There is justice in America for everybody but Haitians. Someone needs to call the president and let him know we are at war against the Taliban and Al-Qaeda and not the Haitian people," unquote. Even more unusual is the fact that Cuban asylum seekers are not detained, even though Cuba is on the U.S. government's list of states which sponsor terrorism, while Haiti is not on that list. When asked for evidence of terrorists attempting to use Haiti to enter the U.S., spokesman for the State Department said they could not provide any at this time.
The UCIMC website reports that on April 22nd, the Peoria City Council voted 8-3 to amend the city's human rights ordinance to prohibit discrimination against persons based on their sexual orientation. The ordinance now protects such persons from discrimination in housing, employment, or public places. Other Illinois cities with similar protections include Springfield, Decatur, Normal, Bloomington, Champaign, Urbana, DeKalb, Evanston, and Chicago.
That wraps up headlines thanks to Clint Popetz, Scott Harris, and Kevin Heinrich. Next up on IMC Radio News, we've got interviews with members from the GE Food Alert campaign, followed by coverage of Operation American Freedom, Democracy Not Empire. Did you know that you may have gotten a dose of prescription drugs in your cereal this morning? Did you know that the FDA says that the newest series of foods, which pose possible health risks and which have been banned in Europe, do not need to be labeled, so you can't know whether or not you are consuming them? And did you know that these foods make up 70% of what line the shelves at your nearby grocery store? If you answer no to all these questions, you might just be in for a surprise. I interviewed Lisa Archer and Kate Madigan from the GE Food Alert, an organization designed to inform the public about the use of untested genetically engineered foods and stop it dead in its tracks. Here's what they had to say.
So can you tell me a little bit about your campaign and why you are specifically focused on Kraft?
Well, we're focused on Kraft for several reasons. One, Kraft is the largest food company in the country, second largest in the world. Its products can be found in 99% of U.S. households. Unfortunately, many of these products, such as Taco Bell taco shells, Post cereal, Lunchables, Boca Burgers, Balance Bars, have been found to contain untested and unlabeled genetically engineered ingredients that pose both environmental and health risks to the public. And Kraft is aware of the potential environmental and health risks of genetically engineered foods. And unfortunately, they're still persisting in using these ingredients in their products. Kraft has already stopped using genetically engineered ingredients in its products in Europe, but it continues to use these ingredients in the United States. And so we're essentially calling on Kraft to, you know, as the largest company, a food company in the country, to play a leadership role and stop posing unnecessary risks to the health and environment of its customers.
All right. Well, can you start out by telling us what exactly genetically engineered foods are and what kinds of health and environmental risks they are associated with?
Well, genetically engineered foods are foods which have had genetic material inserted in them to create a new trait. That, you know, commonly introduced traits include resistance to heavy doses of toxic weed killers, such as Monsanto's patented Roundup Ready soybeans or corn, actually engineering crops to produce their own pesticides. And this includes the BT crops, where they've actually engineered a bacteria gene in to the crops so that the bacteria will produce basically its own sort of pesticide that causes bugs to die that eat it. It's known as BT, and it's something that's used by organic farmers naturally. It's naturally occurring. Unfortunately, when it's produced in the plant through genetic engineering, every part of the plant contains this BT, and we're really not sure what the health or environmental effects of this are. Genetic engineering allows organisms that would never cross in nature, such as bacteria and viruses and corn, to combine in the laboratory settings. This is something that's very new. This kind of genetic crossbreeding has occurred basically in the last 20 years, and we've only seen these products in the market since about 1996. So this is very new, and basically the results are often novel proteins that have never been exposed to human digestive systems, and they have unknown effects on human health and the environment. So both of those things are very, very much concerns to us. In terms of health and environmental risks, there are quite a few, and these include first of all, since they're not mandatory safety testing of genetically engineered foods, they haven't been adequately tested to determine what health effects they have on people. But studies have found that genetically engineered foods may cause allergic reactions, toxicity, new toxins being created, and they also may lead to antibiotic resistance. These foods basically shouldn't be on the market until they're further tested to assess the risks. We do know that hundreds of Americans have reported allergic reactions to the FDA after eating Kraft and other brand name corn products that are likely to contain genetically engineered ingredients.
Could you maybe elaborate a little bit more on one of the more significant or shocking risks that's out there right now?
Another area that the biotech industry is moving into is the creation of biopharmaceutical crops. As shocking as it may seem, they're engineering corn and other crops to produce industrial enzymes and chemicals, as well as pharmaceutical drugs, human prescription drugs, such as blood thinners, blood clotters, abortion-inducing chemicals, HIV vaccine, as well as hepatitis vaccine, and these are just a few of them that we know about.
Mm-hmm.
So this is very frightening in itself that these are being created in plants that obviously are out in nature. But doubly frightening is because the information of where these test plots are planted is considered confidential business information. In other words, it's kept secret from neighboring farmers as well as from consumers, etc. We don't know where they're planting these. And there's a great risk for contamination of food. There's a great risk that, as we've seen with Percy Schmeiser's crop, contamination occurs very easily through wind or insects. Once you let this genie out, you actually are planting this stuff in nature. You have very little control over where the pollen goes or where this genetic material ends up. And so there's a chance that you might get someone else's prescription drugs in your cornflakes.
I also got a chance to talk to Kate Madigan, the Safe Foods Advocate for the Illinois Public Interest Research Group, or PIRG.
So when you look at the risks, both the health, the environmental, and the economic, the question comes to mind, like, where are the advantages, where are the benefits?
Exactly. The biotechnology industry is promising a lot of benefits. These are not being seen. One of the biggest promises that the biotechnology industry is touting is known as golden rice, that the biotechnology industry is promising that genetically engineered crops are going to feed the world, that it's going to be the answer to all of our problems. And golden rice is kind of the poster child of this whole message. And this is rice that's genetically engineered to contain vitamin A. And there are a number of reasons why this rice itself won't solve a lot of malnutrition problems around the world. But the underlying issue is that one thing is that this rice, golden rice, has been in development for over 10 years and has cost over $100 million and is still far from being ready to market. And now breeders, traditional breeders in the Philippines, are really close to marketing a rice that is fortified with vitamin A and zinc and other minerals, and they've done that through traditional breeding, and it is even closer to being marketed than this other genetically engineered golden rice, yet it is being done through traditional breeding, so it doesn't hold a lot of the risks that genetically engineered foods hold.
Okay.
So this technology may not, you know, is not even necessary to enhance foods in the ways that we want them to be enhanced. Maybe I should mention a couple other things about environmental risks. Another environmental risk, and also risk to farmers is and to public health, is increased agrochemical use resulting from genetically engineered crops. So over 99% of genetically engineered crops, so virtually all genetically engineered crops that are marketed here in the U.S. are designed to be herbicide tolerant or to produce their own pesticide or both. Research done by Charles Benbrook, who's the former chair of the board on agriculture of the National Academy of Sciences, finds a 2 to 5 times increase in herbicide use on herbicide-tolerant soybean crops as compared to conventional soybean crops. And then recent research has documented that the popularity of herbicide-tolerant crops, so often known as Roundup Ready crops or Roundup Ready soy, for example, a New York Times article documented that the popularity of herbicide-tolerant crops have led to an increased use in Roundup. And Roundup has been found to have significant health impacts, including disrupting hormone production, and has also been linked to birth defects.
And one would probably be naive to think that this is where the health risks stop.
There are a number of health risks. One of the main health risks is that new allergies can be formed in the process of genetic engineering. New proteins are created that can have unpredictable effects in the digestive system. Starlink corn was one example of how genetically engineered foods can have allergic reactions or can have can be allergens and have the potential for triggering allergic reactions such as vomiting, diarrhea, and even anaphylactic shock. And not only was Starlink an allergen, but scientist advisors to the EPA have raised concerns that all BT proteins could act as allergenic sources. And many of the crops currently grown, that genetically engineered crops, are grown to be BT crops. That means they're genetically engineered to create their own pesticide. And the EPA's own scientist advisors have suggested that all of these crops could be allergens and have recommended more rigorous testing to determine whether or not these are allergens. Yet the EPA has still not performed many of these tests. genetic engineering is a radically new technology, and genetically engineered foods pose significant health and environmental risks. Kraft is currently saying, prove to us that these foods are harmful and we will think about removing them. Yet after the Starlink contamination of their foods, after the EPA, the Environmental Protection Agency, has said that these foods, that most of genetically engineered foods may be allergens, and now that we're seeing the risk posed by biofarm crops, it's hard to imagine what other proof Kraft needs to remove these ingredients. If Kraft were truly committed to food safety and the trust of its consumers, then the company would say to the industry, prove to us that genetically engineered foods are safe before we use them in our products.
At this point, a lot of you might be wondering how you might get involved, or perhaps we haven't built a strong enough case for you yet. Either way, I'm going back to Lisa to tell us how we might help out the campaign, or simply how to find more information on the subject.
Well, there's a lot of ways you can get involved. One, if you have, if you have a phone, even if you got a pen or email, you can call, write, email, or fax Kraft Foods, and tell them that this is an important issue to you, and that really you're concerned about genetically engineered ingredients in their products. And then the second thing you can do is actually ask the management of your local grocery store for a written statement on their policy on GE foods. And then ask them to call Kraft and their corporate headquarters and let them know that customers are demanding genetically engineered free foods. The third thing is vote with your dollars. Buy certified organic foods. Tell your grocer to start carrying a full selection of certified organic foods, because organic farmers and producers operate under strict certification rules that don't allow any genetically engineered seeds or ingredients. So, until we have labeling, until we have these genetically engineered food out of typically bought products in the store, the only guarantee you have that you're not eating genetically engineered foods is to buy organic. The third thing is to join the campaign. You can get more information on this by visiting www.crafty.org. That's www.crafty.org. Or to give us a call at Friends of the Earth, and I'd be happy to talk with you. Our 800 number here is 877-843-8687, and we'd be happy to send you an action kit showing you what you can do in your community to stop the use of genetically engineered foods. And I think people in the Urbana area have an especially powerful voice when it comes to this issue, because you have a Kraft facility in your neighborhood. If you're a Kraft employee, let them know that you're concerned about this. This is an issue that they're really starting to take seriously because of the efforts of folks across the country. And, if you grow food for Kraft, if you're a Kraft farmer, let them know that you're concerned about the risks it's posing to you. There's a lot of things you can do. If you're a student, you can actually do a resolution on your campus to get your cafeteria to stop selling Kraft products until they stop using genetically engineered ingredients. There's a million things you can do. Mm-hmm. And just give us a call or drop us an email, and we'd be happy to help you get involved.
And this is not the usual protest crowd you see opposing this issue. This is not a political issue. This is an issue that affects everyone, isn't it?
Yeah, it's quite a variety of people. We've had folks in all walks of life who've expressed concern to us and have wanted to get involved. People who have never in their lives picketed or petitioned or even written or called a company or even the government about an issue are really concerned about this. And I think it's very visceral. Everyone's got to eat, and we want to make sure our food is safe.
For everybody living in a town that is surrounded by farmland and houses the single largest Kraft plant in the nation, which is the biggest employer in Champaign-Urbana, this is an important issue. You can get more information, which I urge you to do so, by going to their website, www.krfty.org, that's crafty.org, or watching out for the June edition of The Public Eye. Thank you for listening, and this is Sam for IMC Radio News.
Our activists are led by mothers that are concerned about their children eating genetically engineered foods, are led by farmers who don't want their crops contaminated with these foods. They're led by students and employees who don't want to work for a company that is irresponsible in their use of genetically engineered foods. Mm-hmm. This is a very mainstream campaign. This affects everyone. Second intermission,
anticipation. You know the third act, small talk drops out of the play. You're standing in the lobby, tightening your tourniquet, waiting for it, waiting for it.
After 9/11, we were outraged, we were upset, we were torn. We were completely distraught at the loss of more than 2,000 people. Yet we seem to forget about the lives that were lost, the more than 2,000 lives that were lost in the following operation in Afghanistan. We seem to forget about the lives that have been lost, the tens of thousands, the number that we can't even determine yet, in Iraq.
An event called Operation American Freedom, Democracy Not Empire, was held in the Quad today at noon, a rally boasting four speakers prevalent in the community, as well as 20 co-sponsors. IMC News reporter Oram Golden Trist was there with a microphone to catch a glimpse of the free speech unfolding.
Now, some people might make the argument, well, that this war was successful at least because we have minimized civilian casualties. We seem to justify taking thousands of lives and maiming thousands of others by saying that the numbers of casualties were relatively small. Well, relative to what? Relative to the genocide of Hitler or Milosevic? Or the killings that Saddam Hussein himself has done throughout the years? The hand of America has been bloodied with the lives of thousands of people for years. Not only of those who have suffered in Iraq, but all around the world. And it is true. You can hear this in the voices of the people who have suffered from it. And you ask them why. Their homes, their families, their livelihoods have all been disturbed, to say the least, by our actions. Or more so, what we say. I find it quite disturbing by the promises that we make. Before the war started, our president said, we will leave the decision of determining what kind of government up to the Iraqi people, or we will leave the decision of who will govern them up to them. I find it ironic, though, that recently the Secretary of Defense, Donald Rumsfeld, has said that in regards to a cleric, or a Muslim cleric, being established as the government, that anything like that would not fly. And that if you're suggesting how would we feel about an Iranian-type government with a few clerics running everything in the country, the answer is that isn't going to happen. He said that the Iraqi people needed time to determine for themselves how to organize a new government and elections. Yet for some reason he feels that it's up to him and it's okay for the U.S. to superimpose their own type of government onto the Iraqi people. Now, some would argue that it's enough that we give the Iraqi people more freedom than they had under Saddam. But why do we compare our standards to them? Why do we compare our standards to Saddam Hussein? Do we not believe that every human being has the right to democracy in its fullest, not just more than they might have been deprived of? And to all that our government does in the name of democracy, we, the American people, must bear the brunt of this.
The crowd also got to hear U of I law professor Daria Rothmeyer.
I wanted to start out with a quote from George Bush at his State of the Union address in early 2002, where he announced, America will stand firm for the non-negotiable demands of human dignity, the rule of law, limits on the power of the state, private property, free speech, and equal justice. In light of that statement, consider the following. In the weeks following September 11, 2001, 1,200 foreign nationals were detained, many without even being given the opportunity to notify anyone that they'd been detained. And they were held for extended periods before they were released. The INS refused to make known any of the names of the detainees, where they were held, and they closed detention hearings so that people couldn't attend these detention hearings. And then, without any legal authority whatsoever, the INS detained these individuals without charging them and without giving them a hearing. Government under the USA Patriot Act has held individuals completely incommunicado, prohibiting them access to their lawyers, contact with anyone in the outside world. And in 2002, government officials arrested Abdullah al-Mujahir, a U.S. citizen on U.S. soil, held him without access to a lawyer for 9 months until a federal judge just recently ordered government to give him access to a lawyer. And of course, the government is appealing that decision. Under legislation enacted in response to the so-called war on terrorism, government has a broad and unfettered access to an individual's financial, business, and education records. Government can eavesdrop on confidential communications between lawyers and their clients without having to get an approval from a judge. The government now, under the USA Patriot Act and the Homeland Security Act, is able to read your individual email, monitor your internet use without probable cause and without a warrant. Speaking of the right of property, government can search your private property without immediately notifying you that they were there, and can do so without a warrant and without probable cause. Most troubling, these invasions of privacy are not limited to investigations of suspected terrorists. They are now a regular part of the criminal justice system. Academics are certainly not immune. In times that harken back to the days of McCarthy, professors who speak out against the war have their names placed on blacklists, I expect to see mine there sometime soon, receive death threats and hate mail. Congressional representatives sign petitions asking that the presidents of universities fire these academics or deny them tenure for exercising their rights to free speech. When President Bush christened the war on Iraq Operation Iraqi Liberation, progressives waited for the other shoe to drop because we knew that liberation for some meant indefinite detention for others. Free speech for some meant secrecy and deception for others. The rule of law meant the loss of rights for others. How many letters will be opened? Phones will be tapped. How many individuals will be detained? How many lawyers will be denied access? Emails will be read before we recognize that the rule of law was our first casualty in the war on Iraq.
The IMC's own Danielle Chenoweth, also an Urbana City Council member, was also there to speak.
This past century has seen a consolidation of power into the hands of the executive away from Congress. And a lot of that has to do with the atom bomb. It actually has to do with fear. I think the 20th century is a century of fear. It's a time in which our precious structure of government that relies on this balance of power between the local, the state, and the federal, between Congress, the judiciary, and the executive, when we really saw this massive consolidation of power over many decades into the executive branch, And oftentimes the executive had this atom bomb in his hand, and he said, because so far it's only been he said, look, you know, if you try to take power away from me, you will not be protected. I have the atom bomb, and you should be afraid. So this is not a new thing that we are fearful. You know, 9/11 isn't the first time we experienced fear as a country. We actually experienced fear when we dropped bombs on Hiroshima and Nagasaki, because we saw what human beings with their flesh melting off their bodies looked like. And we saw that through photographs, but we knew that that could be us too. And that fear has controlled us for a century. When Congress abdicated its constitutional right to declare war, that was the period in the sentence, your president is the only one who knows how to protect you. And when I went to speak to Timothy Johnson, our elected representative in Congress in February, when we were in Washington, D.C., that's essentially what he told me. He said, you know, I don't really have the information necessary to make decisions about whether or not we should go to war against Iraq, and therefore I trust our president. That was a very terrifying thing indeed.
Overall, I would have had to say the rally was a success. If you didn't know about this rally, and you would have liked to, you can keep up on these kind of events by going to the IMC website at ucimc.org, or stopping by the IMC itself at 218 West Main in Urbana. That wraps up IMC Radio News. Contributors include Clint Popetz, Scott Harris, me, Kevin Heinrich, Avram Goldentrist, and me. If you'd like to volunteer, you can go to our website at ucimc.org, or you could give us a call at 344-8820 and leave a message on Extension 1. Thank you for listening, and this is Sam for IMC Radio News.